Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
It's been over a month since the massive coal ash spill along the Dan River, and Duke Energy has been continually sampling and monitoring the river. The utility says downstream public water supplies remain safe and the river meets all water quality standards. Amy Adams with the group Appalachian Voices isn't so sure. Adams was one of the first environmentalists on the scene at Dan River, and she says it could take years for the river to recover. Adams talked with News and Views producer Clayton Hinkle about the spill and why North Carolinians should be just as concerned about the other coal ash ponds on Duke Energy property that have received far less scrutiny.
You were actually the person who was the first on the scene to document some of the damage to the Dan River. It has been weeks since that spill. What do we know now about the condition of that waterway?
Well, we know that we have a large amount of toxic sediment that spans almost 80 miles of the river, and that we have a massive cleanup effort ahead of us, and that the ecosystem and the stage of the river and the way that the river flows is impeding that process because it is such a high flow river. It's deep, and the sediment is moving as we speak. It's continuing to travel downriver, so we're sort of trying to chase it down and get it out before it continues to travel even further down and cause more problems.
You're also worried about the fine particles that are suspended in the water still.
Right, those fine particles can travel. Like I said, they're suspended in the water column. They don't fall out easy, so they stay with the river as the river flows. That means they're able to make it quite a long distance downstream. And those very fine particles are where we typically find our elevated levels of selenium. A lot of these toxic metals bind to these particles, which is how they move. It also explains why when they filtered the water at Danville and removed those sediments and had just a clear water, that it was not showing the elevated levels of the toxic metals like it was when you had just a water column sample, is because they are bound up and bound to those sediments. So as the sediments suspend and move down, we're also moving those toxics further and further downstream.
There are also signs that are along that waterway that say, do not bathe in this, do not fish in this. Obviously, you're still very concerned about what has happened to that river.
And one of the concerns as far as taking fish or taking mollusk or anything else is that we know that these metals bioaccumulate. So if you're eating something that is eaten, say a mollusk out of the bottom, then you have a potential of a higher concentration in the animal that you eat. And we also know that it's not just the mollusks and the things that couldn't move. A lot of the fish species that live in the Dan make beds in the sediment of the nest. So their eggs are going to be sitting directly on toxic sediment, which means likely we'll see the same sort of deformities that we saw with the selenium toxicity in Lake Sutton. We'll see those in the Dan River. And part of this, we're not going to know the full extent of the damage until spring comes around and these anadromous fish start coming up to spawn. The filter feeders start coming out. The mollusks start coming out. That, I think, is when we're really going to start to get a better indication of what the ecological damage has been.
How can we clean this up? We know now that they're doing some vacuuming, but that doesn't seem like the long-term solution given how far some of these particles have traveled.
There is going to be a certain amount that is going to stay in the river. It cannot be removed. The river's going to have to work to assimilate it and incorporate it. Right now, really the best that we can do is sort of try and vacuum it out of the bottom with these hydraulic dredges. It's not a perfect solution. It runs the risk of resuspending some of that into the water column and, again, moving it further downstream. But the other option is to leave this very toxic source sitting there in the bottom, and that's not really a great option either.
In regards to the broader issue of coal ash, of course, we're worried about the plant there at Dan River, but this is a problem across the state. We've got 14 sites?
There are 14 sites across North Carolina. There are more than 100 sites across the Southeast, and there's even more when you start talking about the nation. So this is not a North Carolina issue. This is a nationwide issue. There are, damage cases that EPA has identified and that advocacy groups have identified, over 236 damage cases across the United States from either groundwater contamination or spills. While this has been terrible, this is a story that's being repeated throughout the country over and over again, and yet we still don't have any federal regulations in oversight of this toxic waste stream.
Governor McCrory had said at one point that the best thing to do was to get the coal ash away from the river. Diener's secretary said, well, maybe that's not the best solution. What does the science say?
The science supports moving it. We've asked Diener for any sort of supporting documentation to support any of its claims that doing anything other than moving it would be the best thing, and they've not been able to do that. There is no discrepancy in their interpretation. Their interpretation is if you have an unlined hole that's holding hazardous waste and toxic waste, then clearly the best remediation is to remove it and put it in an appropriate lined landfill. Leaving it in place is certainly not an option if you care about the groundwater around that location.
You worry in this climate that there is the political will to get this done.
I think that's always a concern. When you have a General Assembly who's cut DENR's funding, reduced their staff size, reduced their resources, they're still tasked with doing as much as they were doing before with a skeleton crew that's left, you have to ask, are they capable of doing it? Certainly they are passionate about it, and the folks that are out in the field do that because they love it and they love the environment and they love the folks in North Carolina. But when there's just too few folks for too much territory, you know, you have to ask, are they up to the task just in numbers? You know, there's thousands of sites that need to be inspected across the state each year. There's a handful of staff left to do them. Certainly the numbers tell you that everything can't be done, that something has to be let go and something has to be missed.
At the same time, it seems like we're waiting for the federal agency, the Environmental Protection Agency, to do something about coal ash in general.
Well, it seems the federal government has failed us for a number of years. They first addressed coal ash in the 2000s, and then after the coal ash spill in Kingston, again, they gave us really great promises. They had a lot of public comment. A lot of folks commented in and said, yes, absolutely, move the coal ash, you know, eliminate this toxic waste stream. And yet it's been stalled. It's been stalled in the Office of Management and Budget. It's been stalled again through congressional actions. It took a state lawsuit to ask the federal government to please issue these regulations because clearly the states are not up to the task.
Finally, it's very easy to forget about something like this spill once it's out of the headlines. Talk a little bit about why the public should remain engaged in the work that Appalachian Voices is doing.
The spill was the big, visible thing that the public could see. But this site before the spill was violating the Clean Water Act. This thing was discharging through seeps into the Dan River arsenic and selenium-laden water. It was contaminating groundwater around its plant. Those are both Clean Water Act violations. So it was already in violation. This sort of just added to it, made it worse. Now the pipe's plugged. We'll go back to its normal background level of violation. And that's the hard thing, is it sort of takes a spill to get the public's attention. But these things are much more insidious just sitting there quietly, not spilling, not spewing. They're just leaking into groundwater. And a lot of these have really high berms. So when you go by on the river, it just looks like a nice big bank. They're kind of out of sight, out of mind. And you know, once the immediacy of the spill is over, that doesn't mean that the problem's gone away. We're just going to go back to what we've been fighting from the beginning, which is the groundwater contamination at all of these sites.
And folks can continue to keep up with this topic on your website.
Absolutely. Appalachian Voices keeps a running log about all the information that's coming out, our testing, as well as the Catawba Riverkeeper and North Carolina Conservation Network and southeastcoalash.org. They've got an amazing website that shows the location of all the sites across the southeast, so you can plug in your state and your address and find out how close you are to a coal ash pond.
Up next, what a ruling about same-sex marriage in Virginia means for North Carolina. Stay with us.